an unspoken solidarity between the two of them. The natural affinity between two people of the same generation when surrounded by people who are older or younger. "Hi, Jane," said Miss Barnes. "I'm sorry, I tried to pick a time when I thought Ziggy would be in bed, but before it got too late." "Oh, well, he's just about to go to bed, actually." Jane made shoo-shoo motions at Ziggy. He looked aghast and ran off to his bedroom, probably worried that he was about to get into trouble with his teacher for being up late. When it came to school, Ziggy was such a little rule follower, always so anxious to please Miss Barnes. That's why it was so impossible to conceive of him behaving so badly if there was even the slightest danger of being caught. Jane kept coming smack up against these walls of impossibility. Ziggy was just not the sort of kid who did things like this. "What's up?" said Jane. "Do you want me to call back later?" asked Miss Barnes. "No, it's okay. He's gone off to his room. Has something happened?" She heard the sharpness in her voice. She'd made an appointment to see a psychologist for the following week. It was a cancellation. She was lucky to get it. She told Ziggy over and over that he must not lay a finger on Amabella or any of the other kids, but he just said in a monotone, "I know that, Mummy. I don't hurt anyone, Mummy." And then always after a few moments, "I don't want to talk about it." What else could she do? Punish him for something she had no conclusive proof that he'd actually done? "I just wondered if you knew about this petition that's circulating," said Miss Barnes. I wanted you to hear about it from me."
"A petition?" said Jane.
A petition calling for Ziggy's suspension," said Miss Barnes. "I'm so sorry. I don't know which parents are behind it, but I just wanted you to know that I'm furious about it, and I know Mrs. Lipman will be furious too, and it will obviously have no bearing on... well, on anything."
"You mean people are actually signing it?" said Jane.
She grabbed the top of a chair and watched her knuckles turn white.
"But we don't even know for sure."
"I know," said Miss Barnes. "I know we don't. From what I've seen, Amabella and Ziggy are friends. So I'm completely baffled. I watch them like a hawk. I really do. Well, I try, but I've got 28 kids, two with ADHD, one with learning difficulties, two gifted kids, at least four whose parents think they're gifted, and one who is so allergic I feel like I should have one hand on the EpiPen at all times, and..." Miss Barnes' voice had become rapid and high-pitched, but she suddenly stopped mid-sentence and cleared her throat before lowering her voice. "Sorry, Jane, I should not be talking like this to you. It's unprofessional. I'm just really upset on your behalf and on Ziggy's behalf."
"That's okay," said Jane. It was somehow comforting to hear the stress in her voice.
"I have a real soft spot for Ziggy," said Miss Barnes. "And I have to say I have a soft spot for Amabella too. They're both lovely kids. I mean, I feel like I have pretty good instincts when it comes to kids. So that's why this whole thing is just so strange. So odd."
"Yes," said Jane. "I don't know what to do."
"We'll handle it," said Miss Barnes. "I promise you, we'll handle it."
It was perfectly obvious she didn't know what to do either.
After she hung up, Jane went into Ziggy's bedroom. He was sitting cross-legged on his bed, his back up against the wall, tears sliding down his face. "Is nobody allowed to play with me now?" he said.
Fear. You've probably heard that Jane was drunk at the trivia night. It's just not appropriate at a school event. Look, I know it must have been very upsetting when all that business was going on with Ziggy, but I kept asking myself, why doesn't she just pull him out of the school? It's not like she had family ties in the area. She should just have moved back to the western suburbs where she grew up and probably would have, you know, fit in.
Gabrielle, we were delightfully tipsy. I remember Madeline saying that. I feel delightfully tipsy.
Typical Madeline. Poor Madeline. Anyway, it was those cocktails. They must have had about 1,000 calories in them.
Samantha.
Everyone was drunk. It was actually a great night until it all went to shit.
Chapter 42.
Where is Perry this time? Asked Gwen as she settled down on Celeste's couch with her knitting. Gwen had been babysitting for the boys since they were babies. She was a grandmother of 12 with an enviably firm manner and a little stash of gold-wrapped chocolate coins in her handbag, which wouldn't be necessary tonight as the boys were already sound asleep.
Geneva, said Celeste. Or wait, is it Geneva? I can't remember. He'll still be in the air right now. He left this morning.
Gwen smiled at her in a fascinated sort of way.
He leads an exotic life, doesn't he?
Yes, said Celeste. I guess he does. I shouldn't be very late. It's a new book club, so I'm not sure how late.
Depends on the book, said Gwen. My book club just did the most interesting book. Now, what was it called? It was about... Nobody really liked it all that much, to be honest. But my friend Pip, she likes to serve a dish that sort of complements the book. So she made this marvellous fish curry. Although it was quite spicy, so we were all a little, you know, Pip.
Gwen waved both hands in front of her mouth to indicate spiciness. The only problem with Gwen was that it was sometimes hard to get away. Perry could do it charmingly, but Celeste found it awkward.
Well, I'd better be off.
Celeste leaned down to pick up her phone, which was on the coffee table in front of Gwen.
That's a nasty bruise, said Gwen. What have you done to yourself?
Celeste pulled the sleeve of her silk shirt farther down her wrist.
Tennis injury, she said. My doubles partner and I both went for the same shot.
Ow, said Gwen. She looked up at Celeste steadily. There was silence for a moment.
Well, said Celeste, as I said, the boys shouldn't wake.
It might be time to find another tennis partner, said Gwen. There was a no-nonsense edge to her voice, the one Celeste had heard her use to astonishing effect when the boys were fighting.
Well, it was my fault too, said Celeste.
I bet it wasn't.
Gwen held Celeste's eyes. It occurred to Celeste that in all the years she'd known Gwen, there had never been mention of a husband. Gwen seemed so completely self-contained, so chatty and busy, with all her talk of her friends and grandchildren. The idea of a husband seemed superfluous.
I'd better go, said Celeste. Chapter 43. Ziggy was still crying when the babysitter knocked on the door. He told Jane that 3 or 4 kids, she couldn't get the facts straight, he was almost incoherent, had said that they weren't allowed to play with him. He sobbed into Jane's thigh and stomach, where his face was uncomfortably wedged. After she'd sat down on the bed next to him and he'd suddenly launched himself at her, nearly knocking her flat on her back. She could feel the hard pressure of his little nose and the wetness of his tears spreading over her jeans as he pushed his face against her leg in a painful corkscrewing motion, as if he could somehow bury himself in her. "That must be Chelsea." Jane pulled at Ziggy's skinny shoulders, trying to dislodge him. But Ziggy didn't even pause for breath. "They were running away from me," he sobbed. "Really fast. And I felt like playing Star Wars." Right, thought Jane. She wasn't going to book club. She couldn't possibly leave him in a state like this. Besides, what if there were parents there who had signed the petition? Or who had told their children to stay away from Ziggy? "Just wait here," she grunted, as she unpeeled his limp, heavy body from her legs. He looked at her with a red, snotty, wet face, and then threw himself face down on his pillow. "I'm sorry, I have to cancel," Jane told Chelsea. "But I'll pay you anyway." She didn't have anything smaller than a $50 note. "Oh, cool. Thanks," said Chelsea. Teenagers never offered change. Jane closed the door and went to phone Madeline. "I'm not coming," she told her. Ziggy isn't well." "It's this thing going on with Amabella, isn't it?" said Madeline. Jane could hear voices in the background. Some of the other parents were there. "Yes. You've heard about the petition?" she asked Madeline, trying to keep her voice steady. Madeline must be sick of her, crying over Harry the Hippo, sharing her sordid little sex stories. She probably rued the day that she'd hurt her ankle. "It's outrageous," said Madeline. "I am incandescent with rage." There was a burst of laughter in the background. It sounded like a cocktail party, not a book club. The sound of their laughter made Jane feel stodgy and left out, even though she'd been invited. "I better let you go," said Jane. "Have fun." "I'll call you," said Madeline. "Don't worry, we'll fix this." As Jane hung up, there was another knock on the door. It was the woman from downstairs, Chelsea's mother, Irene, holding out the $50 note. She was a tall, austere woman with short grey hair and intelligent eyes. "You're not paying her $50 for doing nothing," she said. Jane took the money gratefully. She'd felt a twinge after she'd given it to Chelsea. $50 was $50. "I thought, you know, the inconvenience. She's 15. She had to walk up a flight of stairs. Is Ziggy okay?" "We're having some trouble at school," said Jane. "Oh dear," said Irene. "Bullying," expounded Jane. She didn't really know Irene all that well, except for their chats in the stairwell. "Someone is bullying poor little Ziggy?" Irene frowned. "They say that Ziggy is doing the bullying." "Oh, rubbish," said Irene. "Don't believe it. I taught primary school for 24 years. I can pick a bully a mile off. Ziggy is no bully." "Well, I hope not," said Jane. "I mean, I didn't think so." I bet it's the parents making the biggest fuss, isn't it?
Irene gave her a shrewd look.
Parents take far too much notice of their children these days. Bring back the good old days of benign indifference, I reckon. If I were you, I'd take all this with a grain of salt. Little kids, little problems. Wait till you've got drugs and sex and social media to worry about.
Jane smiled politely and held up the $50 note.
Well, thanks. Tell Chelsea I'll book her up for babysitting another night.
She closed the door firmly, mildly aggravated by her little kids, little problems comment. As she walked down the hallway, she could hear Ziggy still crying, not the angry, demanding cry of a child who wants attention, or the startled cry of a child who has hurt himself. This was a grown-up type of crying. Involuntary, soft, sad weeping. Jane walked into his bedroom and stood for a moment in the doorway, watching him lying face down on the bed, his shoulders shaking and his little hands clutching at the fabric of his Star Wars quilt. She felt something hard and powerful within her. Right this moment, she didn't care if Ziggy had hurt Amabella or not, or if he'd inherited some evil secret tendency for violence from his biological father. And anyway, who said the tendency for violence came from his father? Because if Renata was standing in front of her right now, Jane would hit her. She would hit her with pleasure. She would hit her so hard that her expensive-looking glasses would fly off her face. Maybe she'd even crush those glasses beneath her heel like the quintessential bully. And if that made her a helicopter parent, then who the fuck cared?
Ziggy?
She sat down on the bed next to him and rubbed his back. He lifted his tear-stained face.
Let's go visit Grandma and Grandpa. We'll take our pajamas and stay the night there.
He sniffed. A little shudder of grief ran through his body.
And let's eat chips and chocolates and treats all the way there.
Samantha. I know I've been laughing and making jokes and whatever, so you probably think I'm a heartless bitch. But it's like a defense mechanism or something. I mean, this is a tragedy. The funeral was just... When that darling little boy put the letter on the coffin, I can't even... I just lost it. We all lost it.
Thea. Very distressing. It reminded me of Princess Diana's funeral, when little Prince Harry left the note saying, "Mummy." Not that we're talking about the royal family here, obviously.
Chapter 44. It didn't take Celeste long to realize that this was going to be the sort of book club where the book was secondary to the proceedings. She felt a mild disappointment. She'd been looking forward to talking about the book. She'd even, embarrassingly, prepared for book club. Like a good little lawyer, marking up a few pages with post-it notes and writing a few pithy comments in margins. She slid her book off her lap and slipped it into her bag before anyone noticed and started teasing her about it. The teasing would be fond and good-humoured, but she no longer had the resilience for teasing. Marriage to Perry meant she was always ready to justify her actions, constantly monitoring what she'd just said or done while simultaneously feeling defensive about the defensiveness, her thoughts and feelings twisting into impenetrable knots, so that sometimes... Like right now, sitting in a room with normal people, all the things she couldn't say rose in her throat, and for a moment she couldn't breathe. What would these people think if they knew there was someone like her, sitting across from them,
passing them the sushi. These were polite, non-smoking people who joined book clubs and renovated and spoke nicely. Husbands and wives didn't hit each other in these sorts of congenial little social circles. The reason no one was talking about the book was because everyone was talking about the petition to have Ziggy suspended. Some people hadn't heard about it yet, and the people who did know had the enjoyable task of passing on the shocking development. Everyone contributed what information they had been able to offer. Celeste made agreeable murmurs as the conversation flew, presided over by a flushed, animated, almost feverish Madeline. "Apparently, Amabella hasn't actually said that it is Ziggy. Renata is just assuming it is because of what happened on orientation day. I heard there were bite marks, which is pretty horrifying at this age. There was a biter at Lily's daycare. She'd come home black and blue. I must admit I wanted to murder the little brat who did it, but her mother was so nice. She was in a state over it." "Well, that's the thing. It's actually worse if your child is the one doing the bullying. I mean, we're talking about children here. My question is, why aren't the teachers seeing this? Can't Renata just make Amabella say who is responsible? She's 5 years old." "I guess when you're talking about a gifted child..." "Oh, I didn't know. Is Ziggy gifted?" "Not Ziggy. Annabella. She's definitely gifted. It's Amabella, not Annabella." "Is that one of those made-up names?" "Oh, no, no, it's French. Haven't you heard Renata talk about it?" "Well, that kid has a lifetime ahead of her of people getting her name wrong." "Harrison plays with Ziggy every day. He's never had any problems." "A petition. It's just ridiculous. It's petty. This quiche is great, by the way, Madeline. Did you make it?"
"I heated it up."
"Well, it's like when Renata handed out those invitations to everyone in the class except Ziggy. I thought that was unconscionable. I mean, can a public school expel a child? Is it even possible? Don't the public schools have to take everyone?"
"My husband thinks we've all gone too soft. He says we're too ready to label kids bullies these days, when they're just being kids."
"He might have a point. Although, biting and choking... If it were my child, you wouldn't do a petition."
"Well, no.
Renata has pots of money. Why doesn't she send Amabella off to private school? Then she won't have to deal with the riffraff."
"I like Ziggy. I like Jane too. It can't be easy doing everything on her own."
"Is there a father? Does anyone know?"
"Should we talk about the book?" This was Madeline, finally remembering she was hosting a book club. "I guess we should."
"Who has actually signed this petition so far?"
"I don't know. I bet Harper has signed it."
"Harper started the petition."
"But doesn't Renata work with Harper's husband or something? Or, wait, am I mixed up? Is it your husband, Celeste?"
All eyes were suddenly upon Celeste, as if they'd been given an invisible signal. She gripped the stem of her wine glass.
"Renata and Perry are in the same industry," said Celeste. "They just know of each other."
"We haven't met Perry yet, have we?" said Samantha. "He's a man of mystery."
"He travels a lot," said Celeste. "He's in Geneva at the moment."
No, it was Geneva, definitely Geneva. There was still a strange lull in the conversation, an expectant air. Had she spoken oddly? She felt as if everyone was waiting for more from her.
"You'll meet him at that trivia night," she said.
Perry, unlike many men, loved costume parties. He'd been keen when she'd checked his schedule
and saw that he'd be home for it.
"You'll need a pearl necklace like Audrey wears in Breakfast at Tiffany's," he told her. "I'll get you one from Swiss Pearls in Geneva."
"No," she said, "please don't."
"You were meant to wear cheap costume jewelry when you went to a costume party school trivia night, not a necklace worth more than the money they needed to raise for smart boards." He'd buy her exactly the right necklace. He loved jewelry. It would cost as much as a car, and it would be exquisite. And when Madeline saw it, she'd be delirious, and Celeste would long to unclasp it from her neck and hand it over. "Buy one for Madeline too," she'd wanted to say. And he would, if she asked, with pleasure. But of course Madeline would never accept such a gift. Yet it seemed ridiculous that she couldn't hand over something that would give Madeline such genuine happiness.
"Is everyone going to the trivia night?" she said brightly. "It sounds like fun."
"Samantha, have you seen photos from the trivia night? Celeste looked breathtaking. People were staring. Apparently, that pearl necklace was the real McCoy. But you know what? I was looking at some of the photos, and there's something sad about her face. A look in her eyes, as if she'd seen a ghost. It's almost like she knew something terrible was going to happen that night." Chapter 45.
"That was fun. Maybe next time we'll actually remember to talk about the book," said Madeline. Celeste was the last one there, and was efficiently scraping plates and putting them into Madeline's dishwasher.
"Stop that," said Madeline. "You always do that." Celeste had a talent for the silent, unobtrusive tidy-up. Any time Madeline had Celeste over, her kitchen would be left pristine, bench tops gleaming.
"Sit down and have a cup of tea with me before you go," she told Celeste. "Look, I've got some of Jane's latest lot of muffins. I was too selfish to share them with the book club."
Celeste's eyes brightened. She went to sit down, but then she awkwardly half stood and said, "Where's Ed? He might want the house back to himself."
"What? Don't worry about Ed. He's still snoring away in Chloe's bed," said Madeline. "Anyway, who cares? It's my house too."
Celeste smiled weakly and sat down. "It's awful about poor Jane," she said, as Madeline put one of Jane's muffins in front of her.
"At least we know that nobody here tonight will be signing that stupid petition," said Madeline. "When everyone was talking, I just kept thinking about what Jane went through. She told you the story about Ziggy's father, didn't she?"
It was a formality. Jane had told her that she'd told Celeste as well. She wondered for a guilty moment if it was gossipy to mention it. But it was okay because it was Celeste. Her appetite for gossip was healthy. She wasn't one of those mothers always ravenously searching it out.
"Yes," said Celeste. She bit into the muffin. "Creep."
"I Googled him," confessed Madeline. This was really why she'd brought it up. She felt guilty about it, and she wanted the release of confession. Or she wanted to burden Celeste with the same knowledge, which was probably worse.
"Who?" said Celeste.
"The father. Ziggy's father. I know I shouldn't have."
"But how?" Celeste frowned. "Did she tell you his name? I don't think she even mentioned it to me."
"She said his name was Saxon Banks," said Madeline. "You know, like Mr. Banks in Mary Poppins. Jane said he sang a Mary Poppins song to her. That's why his name stuck in my head."
"Are you okay? Did it go down the wrong way?" Celeste banged her chest with her fist and coughed. Her colour was high.
I'll get you some water, said Madeline.
Did you say Saxon Banks? Said Celeste hoarsely. She cleared her throat and said it again, slower.
Saxon Banks?
Yes, said Madeline.
Why?
Understanding hit her.
Oh, my God, you don't know him, do you?
Perry has a cousin called Saxon Banks, said Celeste. He's a... She paused, her eyes widened.
A property developer.
Jane said that man was a property developer.
It's an unusual name, said Madeline. She was trying not to sound breathlessly thrilled by this horrible coincidence. Of course, it was not exciting that Perry was related to Saxon Banks. This was not an "it's such a small world" coincidence. This was awful. But there was an irresistible, breathless pleasure in it. And, like the awful petition, it was a welcome distraction from her increasingly embittered, almost crazed feelings about Abigail.
He has three daughters, said Celeste. She looked off into the distance as she collected her thoughts.
I know, said Madeline guiltily. Ziggy's half-sisters.
She went to get her iPad from the kitchen bench and brought it back to the table.
And he's devoted to his wife, said Celeste as Madeline pulled up the page again.
He's lovely, warm, funny. I can't even imagine him being unfaithful, let alone being so cruel.
Madeline pushed the iPad over to Celeste.
Is that him?
Celeste looked at the picture.
Yes.
She put a thumb and finger on the screen and enlarged the picture.
I'm probably just imagining it, but I think I can see a resemblance to Ziggy.
Around the eyes? Said Madeline. I know. I thought so too.
There was silence. Celeste stared at the iPad screen. Her fingers drummed on the table.
I like him.
She looked up at Madeline. There was an expression of shame on her face, as though she were feeling somehow responsible. I've always really liked him.
Jane did say he was charming, said Madeline.
Yes, but... Celeste sat back and pushed the iPad away from her. I don't know what to do. I mean, do I have a responsibility now? To, I don't know, to do something about this. It's so tricky. If he'd actually raped her, I'd want him charged, but...
He sort of raped her, said Madeline. It was like a rape.
Or an assault.
I don't know, it was something.
Yes, but...
I know, said Madeline. I know. You can't send someone to jail for being vile.
We don't know for sure, said Celeste after a moment, her eyes on the photo. She might have misheard his name or...
There might be another Saxon Banks, said Madeline, who doesn't show up on Google. Not everyone shows up on the internet.
Exactly, said Celeste, with too much enthusiasm. They both knew it was probably him. He ticked all the boxes. What were the chances of there being two men of around the same age named Saxon Banks in property development?
Is Perry close to him? Asked Madeline.
We don't see him so much now we've all got children, and he lives interstate, said Celeste. But when Perry and Saxon were growing up, they were very close. Their mothers are identical twins.
That's where your twins come from, then, said Madeline.
Well, we always assumed that, said Celeste vaguely,
But then I found out that's only for fraternal twins, not identical twins. So my boys were just a random...
Her voice lapsed.
Oh, God, what happens when I see Saxon next? There was some talk of there being a big family reunion in Western Australia next year. And should I tell Perry? Is there any point in telling Perry? It would just upset him, right? And there's nothing we can do about it, is there? There really is nothing we can do.
If it were me, said Madeline, I'd tell myself that I'd keep it a secret from Ed, and then I'd probably just blurt it out.
It might make him angry, said Celeste. She gave Madeline a strangely furtive, almost childish look.
With his bastard cousin, I should think so.
I meant with me. Celeste pulled on the cuff of her shirt.
With you? You mean he might feel defensive on his cousin's behalf? Said Madeline. She thought, so what? Let him be defensive. I guess he might be, she said.
And it would be very awkward, said Celeste. Like when Perry meets Jane at school events, knowing what he'd know.
Yes. So maybe you do have to keep it a secret from him, Celeste, said Madeline solemnly, knowing as she spoke that if it were Ed, she'd be yelling at him the moment he walked in the front door. Do you know what your terrible cousin did to my friend?
And keep it a secret from Jane? Winced Celeste.
Absolutely, said Madeline. I think.
She chewed the inside of her mouth. Don't you think so? Jane would be hurt and angry if she were ever to find out, but how would it benefit her to know? It wasn't like she wanted Ziggy to have some sort of relationship with this man.
Yes, I think so, said Celeste. Anyway, the fact is, we don't know for sure that it's him.
We don't, agreed Madeline. It was obviously important to Celeste that this point was reiterated. It was their defense, their excuse.
I'm terrible at keeping secrets, confessed Madeline.
Really? Celeste gave her a twisted sort of smile. I'm quite good at it.
Chapter 46. Celeste drove home from book club, thinking about the last time she'd seen Saxon and his wife, Eleni. It was at a wedding in Adelaide just before she got pregnant with the boys. A huge wedding for one of Perry's multitude of cousins. By chance, she and Perry had pulled up in the reception centre parking lot right next to them. They hadn't seen one another at the church, and Perry and Saxon had jumped straight from their cars to give each other bear hugs and manly slaps on the back. Both Perry and Saxon were teary. There was real affection between the two of them. Celeste and Eleni were both shivering in sleeveless cocktail dresses, and they were all looking forward to a drink after sitting through the long wedding ceremony in a cold, damp church.
The food is meant to be excellent here, Saxon had said, rubbing his hands together.
And they'd all been walking up the path into the warmth when Eleni stopped. She'd left her phone sitting on a pew in the church. It was a 1-hour return trip.
You stay, I'll go, said Eleni.
But Saxon just rolled his eyes and said,
No, you won't, my love.
Perry and Saxon had ended up driving back together to get the phone, while Celeste and Eleni went inside and enjoyed champagne in front of a roaring fire.
Oh, dear, I feel just terrible, Eleni had said cheerfully as she beckoned over a waiter to refill her glass.
No, you won't, my love.
How could a man who reacted with such rueful, chivalrous good humour to a really annoying inconvenience be the same person who treated a 19-year-old girl with such cruelty? But she should know better than anyone that, of course, that was possible. Perry would have gone back to get the phone for her too. Did the two men share some sort of genetic mental disorder? Mental illnesses ran in families, and Perry and Saxon were the sons of identical twins. Genetically speaking, they weren't just cousins. They were half-brothers. Or had their mothers somehow broken them? Jean and Eileen were sweet elfin women with identical babyish voices, tinkly laughs and good cheekbones. The sort of women who seemed so femininely submissive and were anything but. The sort of women who attracted the sort of successful men who spend their days telling people what to do and then went home and did exactly as they were told by their wives. Perhaps that was the problem. Celeste and Eleni lacked that peculiar combination of sweetness and power. They were just ordinary girls. They couldn't live up to the maternal role models established by Jean and Eileen for their sons. And so Saxon and Perry both had developed these unfortunate glitches. But what Saxon had done to Jane was far, far worse than anything Perry had ever done. Perry had a bad temper. That was all. He was hot-headed, volatile. The stress of his job and the exhaustion and upheaval of all that international travel made him snap. It didn't make it right. Of course not. But it was understandable. It wasn't malevolent. It wasn't evil. It was poor Eleni who was unknowingly married to an evil man. Did she have a responsibility to tell Eleni what her husband had done? Did she have a responsibility to the tipsy, impressionable young girls Saxon might still be picking up in bars? But they didn't even know for sure it was him. Celeste drove her car into her driveway, flicking the switch for the triple car garage and seeing their lavish panoramic view, the twinkling lights of homes around the bay, the mighty black presence of the ocean. The garage door opened like a curtain, revealing a lit-up stage, and her car purred on in without her having to lift her foot off the accelerator. She turned the key. Silence. There was no garage in that other pretend life she was planning. There was an underground parking lot for the apartment block, but the spaces looked tiny, with big concrete posts. She'd have to reverse into her spot. She already knew that she'd smash a taillight. She was a terrible parker. She pulled up the sleeve of her shirt and looked at the bruises on her arm. Yes, Celeste. Stay with a man who does this to you because of the great parking. She opened her car door. At least he wasn't as bad as his cousin. Chapter 47.
What is this petition-writing woman's name? Said Jane's father. Why, what are we going to do to her, Dad? Said Dane. Break her knees? I'd bloody like to, said Jane's father. He held a tiny jigsaw piece up to the light and squinted at it. Anyway, what sort of name is Amabella? Silly sort of a name. What's wrong with Annabella?
You have got a grandson called Ziggy, pointed out Dane.
Hey, said Jane to her brother, it was your idea.
Jane was at her parents' place, sitting at the kitchen table, drinking tea, eating biscuits, and doing a jigsaw puzzle. Ziggy was asleep in Jane's old bedroom. She was going to give him the day off school tomorrow, so they would stay the night and just hang around here in the morning. Renata and her friends would be happy. Perhaps, thought Jane as she looked at her mother's 1980s apricot and cream kitchen, she would never go back to Piriwi. This was where she belonged. It had been a kind of madness moving so far away in the first place. Almost a sickness. Her motives had been warped and weird, and this was her punishment. Here, Jane felt bathed in familiarity. The mugs, the old brown teapot, the tablecloth, the smell of home, and, of course, the puzzle. Always the puzzles. Her family had been addicted to jigsaw puzzles for as long as Jane could remember. The kitchen table was never used for eating, only the latest puzzle. Tonight they were beginning a new one Jane's father had ordered online. It was a 2,000-piece puzzle of an impressionist painting. Lots of hazy swirls of colour. "Maybe I should move back over this way," she said, seeing how it felt. And as she spoke, she thought, for some reason, of blue blues, the smell of coffee, the sapphire blue shimmer of the sea, and Tom's secret wink as he handed over her takeaway coffee, as if they were both in on a secret joke. She thought of Madeline holding up the roll of cardboard like a baton as she walked up the stairs of her apartment, and Celeste's bobbing ponytail as they went on their morning walks around the headland, beneath the towering Norfolk pines. She thought of the summer afternoons earlier in the year when she and Ziggy had walked straight from school to the beach. Ziggy taking off his school shoes and socks on the sand, peeling off his shorts and shirt, and running straight into the ocean in his underpants while she chased him with a tube of sunscreen, and he laughed with joy as the white froth of a wave broke around him. Recently, thanks to Madeline, she'd picked up two new lucrative local clients within walking distance of her flat. Piriwi Perfect Meats and Tom O'Brien's Smash Repairs. Their paperwork didn't smell. In fact, Tom O'Brien's receipts smelled of potpourri. She realized with a shock that some of the happiest moments of her life had taken place over the last few months. "But we actually do love living there," she said. "Ziggy loves school too." "Well, he normally does." She remembered his tears earlier tonight. She couldn't keep sending him to school with children who told him they weren't allowed to play with him. "If you want to stay, you stay," said her father. "You can't let that woman bully you into leaving the school. Why doesn't she leave?" "I cannot believe that Ziggy would be bullying her daughter," said Jane's mother, her eyes on the jigsaw pieces she was sliding rapidly back and forth on the table. "The point is that she believes it," said Jane. She tried to slot a piece into the bottom right-hand corner of the puzzle. "And now the other parents believe it too. And, I don't know, I can't say for sure that he didn't do something." "That piece doesn't go there," said her mother. "Well, I can say for sure that Ziggy hasn't done anything. He simply hasn't got it in him. Jane, that piece does not go there. It's part of the lady's hat." "What was I saying? Oh, yes, Ziggy. I mean, my gosh, look at you, for example. You were the shyest little thing in school, wouldn't say boo to anyone. And, of course, Poppy had the sweetest nature." "Mum, Poppy's nature isn't relevant." Jane gave up on the puzzle piece and threw it down. Her frustration manifested itself in a sudden burst of anger and irritability that she directed at her poor, defenseless mother. "For heaven's sake, Ziggy is not Poppy reincarnated. Poppy didn't even believe in reincarnation. And the fact is, we don't know what personality trait Ziggy might have inherited from his father, because Ziggy's father was... His father was..." She stopped herself just in time. "Idiot." There was a sudden stillness around the table. Dane looked up from where he'd been reaching across the table to slot in a puzzle piece. "Darling, what are you saying?" Jane's mother removed a crumb from the corner of her mouth with her fingernail.
Are you saying he... Did he hurt you?
Jane looked around the table. Dane met her eyes with a question. Her mother tapped two fingers rapidly against her mouth. Her father's jaw was clenched. There was an expression, something like terror, in his eyes.
"Of course not," she said.
When someone you loved was depending on your lie, it was perfectly easy.
"Sorry. God, no, I didn't mean that. I just meant that Ziggy's biological father was basically a stranger. I mean, he seemed perfectly nice, but we don't know anything about him, and I know that's shameful.
I think we've all gotten over the shock of your hussy-like behaviour by now, Jane," said Dane deliberately. He wasn't falling for the lie, she could tell. He didn't need to believe it as badly as her parents did.
"We certainly have," said Jane's mother, "and I don't care what sort of personality trait Ziggy's biological father had. I know my grandson, and he is not, and never will be, a bully."
"Absolutely not," agreed Jane's father.
His shoulders sagged. He took a sip of his tea and picked up another jigsaw piece.
"And just because you don't believe in reincarnation, missy," Jane's mother tapped her on the arm, "doesn't mean you can't be reincarnated."
Jonathan. When I first saw the playground at Piriwee Public, I thought it was amazing. All those secret little hideaways. But now I see that had its downside. All sorts of things were going on at that school out of sight, and the teachers were clueless.
Chapter 48. Madeline stood in her living room and wondered what to do. Ed and the kids were asleep, and thanks to Celeste, all the cleaning up after book club was done. She should go to bed, but she didn't feel tired enough. Tomorrow was Friday, and Friday mornings were hectic because she had to drive Abigail to her math tutor before school, and Fred did chess club, and Chloe... She stopped. She didn't need to get Abigail to her math tutor by 7:30 a.m. That was no longer her responsibility. Nathan or Bonnie would have to take Abigail. She kept forgetting her services as Abigail's mother were no longer required. Her life was theoretically easier with only two children to get out of the house each day, but each time she remembered a task relating to Abigail that was no longer hers, she felt that sharp sense of loss. Her whole body jangled with anger she couldn't release. She picked up Fred's toy lightsaber from where he'd conveniently left it on the floor for someone to trip over tomorrow morning. She turned on the switch so it burned red and green and sliced it through the air like Darth Vader, taking down each of her enemies.
"Damn you to hell for stealing my daughter, Nathan. Damn you to hell for helping him, Bonnie. Damn you to hell, Renata, for that nasty petition. Damn you to hell, Miss Barnes, for letting poor little Amabella get secretly bullied in the first place."
She felt bad for damning poor dimpled Miss Barnes to hell and quickly moved on with her list.
"Damn you to hell, Saxon Banks, for what you did to Jane, you nasty, nasty man."
She swung the lightsaber so enthusiastically over her head that it clanged against the hanging light and sent it swinging back and forth. Madeline dropped the lightsaber back on the couch and reached up to hold the light fixture steady. Right, no more playing with the lightsaber. She could just imagine Ed's face if she'd broken a light fixture, pretending to be Darth Vader. She went back into the kitchen and picked up the iPad from where she'd left it after showing Celeste the pictures of Saxon Banks. She would play some nice soothing Plants versus Zombies. It was important to keep her skills up to date. She liked hearing Fred say, "Mom, that's awesome," when he looked over her shoulder and saw she'd gone up a level and gotten a new fancy weapon to take on the zombies.
First, she'd have another quick look at Abigail's Facebook and Instagram accounts. When Abigail was living at home, Madeline had dutifully checked in every now and then on her daughter's online presence, just to be a good, responsible modern mother. But now, she did it addictively. It was like she was stalking her own daughter, pathetically seeking out bits of information about her life. Abigail had changed her profile picture. It was a full-length photo of her facing the camera, doing a yoga pose, hands folded in prayer, one skinny leg propped on the other knee, her hair falling over one shoulder. She looked beautiful, happy, radiant even. Only the most selfish of mothers could feel resentful toward Bonnie for introducing her daughter to something that made her so obviously happy. Madeline must be the most selfish of mothers. Perhaps Madeline should take up yoga, so she and Abigail would have something in common. But every time she tried yoga, she found herself silently chanting her own mantra, "I'm so bored. I'm so bored." She scrolled down the comments from Abigail's friends. They were all supportive, but then she stopped on one from Abigail's friend Freya, who Madeline had never liked all that much. One of those toxic friends. Freya had written, "Is this the shot you're going to use on your project? Or not sexy slash slutty enough?" "Sexy slash slutty?" Madeline's nostrils flared. What was the little witch Freya talking about? What project required Abigail to be sexy slash slutty? It sounded like a project that needed to be stopped. This was the thing with the murky world of the internet. You swam along through cyberspace, merrily picking up this and that, and next thing you knew, you'd stumbled upon something unsavory and ugly. She thought of how she'd felt seeing the face of Saxon Banks on her computer screen. This was what happened when you spied. Abigail had replied to Freya's comment, "Shh, top secret." The reply had been sent 5 minutes ago. Madeline looked at the time. It was nearly midnight. She always insisted that Abigail had an early night before math tutoring, because otherwise she had to be dragged out of bed, and the tutoring money would be wasted if Abigail was too tired to concentrate. She sent her a private message. "Hey, what are you doing up so late? You've got tutoring tomorrow. Go to bed. Mum. Kiss, kiss, kiss." She noticed that her heart was beating after she pressed send, as if she'd broken a rule. But she was Abigail's mother. She still had the right to tell her to go to bed. Abigail answered immediately. "Dad has cancelled the tutor. He's going to tutor me instead." "Go to bed yourself." Kiss. "He what?" said Madeline to the computer screen. "He fucking what?" Nathan had cancelled the math tutor. He'd made a unilateral decision about Abigail's education. The very same man who had missed school plays and parent-teacher interviews and athletics carnivals and preparing a trembly little five-year-old for show-and-tell every Monday morning and projects on big sheets of cardboard and projects that needed to be submitted for the first time online and login instructions didn't make any sense and homework forgotten until late the night before and covering books with contact paper and exam nerves. And the meeting with that lovely teacher with the crazy jewelry who said all those years ago that Abigail would probably always struggle with math, so give her all the support she needs. How dare he? She dialed Nathan's number without a moment's thought, trembling with righteous rage. There was no way she could wait till the morning. She needed to yell at him now, right now, before her head exploded. He answered with slurred, sleepy surprise. Hello? "You cancelled Abigail's math tutor? You just cancelled without even checking with me first?" There was silence.
Nathan? Said Madeline sharply.
She heard him clear his throat. Maddie? He sounded wide awake now. Did you seriously...